Cindy, that was a cool bit of music, and that cool bit of music was played because...
we are celebrating 3 years of the Fueling Creativity and Education podcast.
Yes, and so we are interrupting our regular season 8 scheduling, and this is not an interview. This is just Cindy and I going through and reflecting on our 3 years producing this podcast and all of the amazing guests that we've had on the show. So let's begin. Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Matthew Werwood.
And my name is Dr. Cindy Burnett.
This is the Fueling Creativity in Education podcast.
On this podcast, we'll be talking about various creativity topics and how they relate to the field of education.
We'll be talking with scholars, educators, and resident experts about their work, challenges they face, and exploring new perspectives of creativity.
All with the goal to help fuel a more rich and informed discussion that provides teachers, administrators, and emerging scholars with the information they need to infuse creativity into teaching and learning.
So let's begin. So Cindy, 3 years of the podcast, pretty much as of today, releasing this episode, how does it feel?
I can't believe it's been that long. It doesn't feel like we've been doing it for 3 years, but it feels really amazing. And as I told you, Matt, originally we weren't planning to do an anniversary episode, but there's just so much that's changed in my thinking because of our podcast. And I really wanted to have a conversation with you to explore some of those things.
I'm more than happy to have the conversation. And certainly when we've been reading blogs about podcasting, it says, hey, sometimes mix up the format a little bit. So I think that provides us an opportunity to do that. And also, we've just hit 150 episodes. So we've produced 150 episodes in 3 years, which is pretty impressive given our busy schedules.
It is. I agree. And it hasn't been easy. And I think one of the things that's really kept us going was the fact that we've had some really good feedback from people. So those emails that you have sent us or those reviews you've posted, they really mean a lot and they keep us going. So if you haven't posted a review or sent us an email telling us what you think of the podcast, we would love to hear from you.
Yes. And also we do appreciate our followers. You know, when we kind of drop an episode, shall we say, each week and we see those immediate downloads, it's kind of great to know that we've got followers regularly tuning in to the podcast. And it's a podcast that we care a lot about because we care about creativity in education, which we know many of you listening do as well. And so in this episode, what we thought we would do is kind of explore what we've learned by interacting with the many guests that we've had on the show regarding creativity and education. Of course, we had ideas and thoughts coming into the podcast. Those ideas and thoughts have obviously been reshaped, expanded, thrown around a little bit because of the amazing conversations that we've had. So, Cindy, when we reflect back over the last 3 years and we think about, you know, where you were in terms of maybe how you viewed a particular topic within creativity or how you kind of considered an event or situation in the classroom environment, what's kind of changed for you and why?
So, Matt, I have three things. Do you want to hear the first one?
Yes.
So the first one is I wrote a chapter for Ron Baghetto's edited collection, Creativity Under Duress, I don't know, maybe 8 years ago. And I wrote about how we needed an evolution in education, not a revolution. And there's a lot of talk around, oh, we need a creative revolution. And revolutions, quite frankly, don't typically end well. And I think there's a lot of teachers out there doing wonderful things that we could evolve to, that we could evolve more of our standard practices into more creative practices. So that was the chapter I wrote. But after the last 3 years of this podcast, I am leaning now more toward revolution because, and I can't believe I'm actually saying this, but because of generative AI, because of the pandemic, because of how rapidly the world is changing. It's interesting. I read a post the other day from someone on LinkedIn and it said, what is our purpose in education? And it really had me reflecting on what is the purpose of education? Why are we sending our children to school? What are the things that we actually want them to learn? And I just think that we need to do an overhaul. And I think we need to try some big experiments and see how they go. Because I just don't know if what we're doing now is going to be meaningful and relevant for the next 10 years.
Well, first of all, I certainly have heard you reference the evolution versus revolution topic and that paper a few times. And so it's interesting to hear that you've kind of got to that point where you think, hey, you know what? We need a revolution. And you know, when you're talking about revolution, you're talking about the fact that, hey, listen, we need public school to kind of break down, crash, and we need to kind of like reassemble it from the ground up. Is that the type of thing that you're talking about?
It seems so scary, but yes. And I don't know if it looks like it has to be completely broken down, but I think we really need to stop, bring teachers together and administrators together, not just policymakers, but we really need it from the policy angle. We need to look at our policies and look at how we're teaching students and what we're teaching students and say, what is the purpose of schooling? What are we doing for these students that are going to help benefit them in the future? Because so much of what I'm seeing happening in classrooms isn't going to be relevant in the next 10 years.
I mean, this is just a fun conversation to have. And my fear is we're not going to now get anywhere. I mean, you've literally just said, like, hey, what do you think of the education system? And you're talking about the goals of education, right? And so it's a pretty tough conversation to kind of touch on lightly.
Yes.
What I would say is, I think identifying the goals of education is important. It's certainly something that I've been thinking about for many years. And the reason why I do that is that I actually have a few different projects going on. And one of them is called Digital Media Connecticut. And it's very much kind of industry focused, the concept of that kind of talent pipeline around digital media talent in the state of Connecticut. I'm not going to get into the weeds of the project itself, but I quite often say to myself, when I've got my DMCT hat on, I'm laser focused on the needs of industry. Now, you know, for the most part, for many years, we would say that the goals of education traditionally have prioritized the needs of industry and economic needs as well, right? If you look at Sputnik, for example, and how we responded to Sputnik, it was very much about the fact that, you know, we really need to focus on our education system so that we can maintain economic superiority. At the same time, though, I think that over the past, I'd say 5 to 10 years, I think we've recognized, hey, if we don't teach critical thinking, for example, then we're going to have an issue in society when it comes to evaluating information on social media. And so that brings up things like civics as well. And also, I've started to think a little bit more about the challenges that parents face with technology. And I'm teaching a class called Human Development, Digital Media and Technology to the students and their undergraduate students. And I joked around to them last week and I said, hey, another goal of this class, of course, is that you're going to be parents in potentially 10, 15 years time. And so therefore, the things that you're learning in this class might actually assist you in parenting with technology. And, you know, there's certainly people in the history of education that have advocated for promoting, you know, family and parenting within education as well. So for me, I think the goals of education is slightly different than whether or not we need a revolution, because only when you've defined those goals are you in a position to evaluate whether or not the system is working effectively. And I think that's part of the challenge, to your point, is that I think maybe we've assumed that all of the goals are associated with industry. And I think it's an easy way to evaluate the education system. But there might be some other goals and other goals that are not meeting as well. And this is all part of that important discussion.
I would love to hear from our listeners. Do you think we need a revolution or do you think we need an evolution of education? I'm still teetering in the middle, but I always was very against the revolution. But I think there needs to be bigger changes than just small changes now, because there's just too much changing in the world and we're just not keeping up.
Can I just throw something out there that Jonathan Plucker said to me? You know, I was interviewing Jonathan Plucker for my film, which I don't think was a very good film, Class of 2032, Schooling for a Digital Culture. Listen, I can say I thought Creativity in Education, Exploring the Imbalance, I think was a good film. I think it's dated now. But Class of 2032, I think had some good moments. But, you know, I think I fell short on some of my goals for that film. But the point is, I was interviewing Jonathan Plucker, and it was actually off, I can't remember if we were recording or not, but it never made it into the film. But he said something interesting to me. He said, because we were talking about what the school experience might be like in the year 2032. And he said to me, he said, you know, if you go back in time, the classroom actually would look very different. You know, there's a lot of people that kind of said, oh, we're still teaching in the same way as we did, you know, 50 years ago for the manufacturing model. I say, are we? You know, if you go back in time to a classroom 20 years ago, 30 years ago, would it look the same? Would you have station rotations? Would you have personalized instruction taking place on the tablet devices? Would you have these project-based learning environments that we're seeing taking place? Social-emotional learning? You know, I do think that we are seeing subtle changes in education, but it might be that they're coming about so slowly that we don't always recognize them. Are they effective? Again, another conversation as well. But it is something that I've constantly thought about. If I could go back in time 20, 30 years ago and then compare it a classroom to today, I think we might see some significant changes that have taken place that we just haven't noticed.
But do you remember the episode we had with Colvin Atwell where he talked about how he was going into schools and asking teachers, why are the students sitting in rows? And they said, well, that's just the way I thought it should be. I mean, that is going back 50 years. Students, you know, sitting in rows and listening to the teacher talk.
Yeah, we're going to get into trouble. You see, you know what? So I'm really analytical, right? So I certainly think that's an important question to ask. But if you turn around and say, well, the reason why I've got them in rows is because of A, B, and C, and next week I'm planning on changing the rows to accommodate this different assignment. That would be different, right? So right. I don't think rows are always necessarily bad.
Right.
And I do think that, you know, obviously there's a lot of educational research out there. There are probably certain practices to which are effective. And so if we know something is effective, should we change it, right? And so, you know, I think this question is really loaded and it's really hard to address, but I think it still comes back to what you said. What are the goals of education? And you might even break that up. What's the goals of elementary education? And what's the goals of secondary education? We might find that the goals of elementary education actually get us to a place where we say, hey, based on our goals, we don't want artificial intelligence in elementary education. We may say that. But unless we've actually identified goals, I think it's hard for us to kind of make these judgments.
All right, Matt, tell me your first one.
I'm going to try and keep it simple because I feel like I've taken a lot up on your one. You know, for me, I've been really fascinated with how often modeling comes up in our conversations. You know, so many of our guests have spoken about the importance of modeling creative behavior. Yes, it's something that I think I've practiced, but the amount of times it's come up on our podcast to me shows that it's actually something that's very much valued within the teaching community, particularly those that want to promote creativity, is that if you want to promote creativity, you have to model creative behaviors.
Well, Matt, that was short and sweet and succinct. So why don't you give us another one?
Okay, I've got another short and succinct. By the way, I couldn't actually say the word succinct when I was doing my doctoral program. It took me about 2 years. I would actually have to spell it S-U-C-C-I-T. I think that's succinct, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, it was close enough, but I could never actually say the word succinct. But okay, here's another succinct one for you. Learning's hard and it's uncomfortable. And, you know, I would say that was a first season, Ron Baghetto. I've referenced it before, but it really has changed my practice because I would typically perceive uncomfort. I would perceive students expressing, you know, challenges within the learning experience as bad. I was a bad teacher. And of course, maybe there's the, you know, I was bad here and there. But actually, what I've began to realize is that uncomfort is part of the learning experience. And obviously, within reason. And obviously, we need to make sure that we've got an environment where they can feel comfortable feeling uncomfortable. And obviously, you know, there's types of uncomfort that we don't want. But that's something that's really changed how I approach both curriculum development and how I interact with students in my classroom environment. And that 100% came from the podcast.
I vividly recall our conversations around that, Matt, because we were having conversations just before we started recording this about sometimes I feel like I want to please and I want to please my students. I want them to have a good experience and I don't want them to have that discomfort. So sometimes I have to walk away and go, it's part of the process. It's part of the process. It's part of the process. And even recently, I've been working with a group of fourth and fifth graders on invention. And some of them are just like, I can't do this. I can't do this. And I'm like, walk away. It's part of the process. You don't need to do it for them. And so I do think that was a really great insight and something I've taken along with me as well.
All right. So you've had two from me. What's another one from you?
So I think the second one is around the evolution of how we've seen from our first conversation with Brian Alexander about collaborative robots and co-creation and having that initial conversation with him. And I remember walking away, and this was obviously before generative AI was released, but walking away from that conversation like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this stuff is happening, and starting to really look at the kind of artificial intelligence and generative AI and how things were emerging. And I hadn't heard anything about it. So I remember that initial moment. And looking through things and seeing how it's evolved and how, you know, when ChatGPT was released and how we've had so many conversations and interviews now about those conversations and really digging deep and getting into deep waters around what this might look like for the future and how quickly it's changing. I mean, I think almost every other day, you and I are sending each other something like, oh my gosh, you have to see this. Oh, can you believe they're creating videos from these things now? And it's just, it's changing so, so quickly. And I look forward to seeing what happens in the next 3 years.
I'm glad you brought that up because it wasn't one of my three, but I actually think it probably should have been one of my three because you're right. I think the reason why I've forgotten about it is because talking about co-creativity and cobots and interacting with artificial intelligence within the process is now such a popular topic. But we did start talking about that. What was it, 18 months before ChatGPT came out? And we were really like, I remember we were blown away. We were absolutely blown away. We're talking about cobots. I think we was bringing up cobots in any opportunity we had to bring up cobots with someone who we thought could talk about it, we did. And that also is what led to us starting to talk about this idea of the future creative, which is going to be front and center on the book that we hope to have out sometime in early 2025. And so ultimately, I'm really glad that you brought that up. It wasn't in my three, but it wasn't in my three simply because I probably forgot about it. But you're right. It was a real big changing moment for us both.
So what's your third one?
You know what? The third one is probably just, do you know when I started this podcast and I said to you, we was talking about like professional goals. And I said, look, I'm pretty good at putting together a presentation and reading from a script, not reading from a script, but when I've got a kind of clear structured story, I can deliver that narrative. But I said, one of the things that I was really concerned about with the podcast is the fact that I go off on tangents, I get super excited. And when my brain starts kind of like, you know, I think anyone who's listened knows that Matt can go off on tangents and get a little bit super passionate sometimes. And you know, one of the goals that I set myself for the podcast is being, I suppose, more succinct in how I respond, being better at asking questions in more clear ways. I'm not necessarily saying I've met that goal, but I think I've progressed toward that goal because of the podcast. And so I think a big takeaway for me is that this podcast, whether we call it a side hustle or part of our own professional growth, has served me to, in essence, try and be a better person. And it's something that I've kind of really cherished. And it's why I kind of advocate for teachers when it comes to, if you've got a great idea, maybe that great idea is expressed through a blog. If you've got a framework you've created in your classroom environment, maybe it's a case of you develop a whole bunch of video tutorials to go and share that framework with the world. If you feel like you're a good public speaker and you want to get out and interact with other teachers, go and pursue opportunities to secure funding so you can go out and attend conferences. And for me, the podcast has been that outlet. I've really enjoyed it. I suppose just making the podcast has given me so much, but I think, I don't think I've done a good job of actually saying what a takeaway is. I suppose the takeaway is the need for us to pursue creative endeavors and maybe making sure that those creative endeavors find their ways in alignment with our professional growth. We enjoy it. We're passionate about it, but we can continue to keep learning by going and pursuing these creative endeavors. Yeah, I'm not sure I like that one. I didn't articulate that. The irony of me not articulating that one brilliantly is the fact that I literally said that it's connected to the goal of being better at articulating. Whatever. I'm not editing this. Everyone can keep it. Mate, after 3 years, I've got more comfortable just being me on the show.
I think that's it, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's something we've both become much more comfortable with. And I remember it sort of came to head when we were interviewing Ron Baghetto at the end of season one, wasn't it? When we did the Double Espresso with him. And I wanted it also calculated so that everything came out the way I wanted it to. And then it was just like, why? And I think he even questioned, why are you doing that? And, you know, really letting go of that over the last 3 years has made it a more authentic conversation.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, just thinking about that first season, I was recording that first season in my closet, if you remember.
Yes.
constantly terrible echoing noise with my microphone to the extent that I would sometimes have to re-record my questions. And yes, because of the challenge that I just referenced, I was really struggling to re-record my questions. I'd have to re-record the question like 5-6 times. It was a very stressful time. And again, it's not related to the discussion per se, but I think after 3 years, we've got a lot better at kind of like streamlining the production of these podcast episodes as well. And actually, one more connection I'm going to make is, of course, what that means is we've begun to model creative behavior on the show by being a lot more upfront and open about who we are and our mistakes.
Yes.
Do you want to bring more creative and critical thinking into your school? Look no further than our podcast sponsor, Curiosity to Create.
Curiosity to Create is a nonprofit organization dedicated to engaging professional development for school districts and empowering educators through online courses and personal coaching.
And if you're craving a community of creative educators who love new ideas, don't miss out on their Creative Thinking Network. Get access to monthly webinars, creative lesson plans, and a supportive community all focused on fostering creativity in the classroom.
To learn more, check out curiositytocreate.org or check out the links in the show notes for this episode. So do you want to hear my final one?
Yes, I want to hear your final one.
Okay, so, and this is a big one too, is I think before we started this podcast, I had a much more limited view of creativity. And what I mean by that is I've always been curious why people don't understand what creativity is. And I think what this podcast has showed us is that creativity is a multifaceted phenomenon, which we know, but it shows up in so many ways. So we've talked about fun recently, bravery, wellness, creativity in emotions, creativity in health and wellness, creativity in the arts. So there's so many ways to take creativity, and those were just a few that just from this last season, actually. There's so many ways to take creativity and apply it in the classroom that it's hard to nail down exactly what it is because it means so much to so many different people. You know, people like the word innovation because it's, I don't know, more attractive in some way, right? So a lot of people like the word innovation more than creativity, but I think innovation is so much more limiting. So if we look at innovation as that thing that's creatively produced, that's out there in the universe that people accept, that's a product of some sort, an idea of some sort that's been accepted. But creativity is so many things, and it's so rich and lovely, and it's like playing with a big ball of cotton candy. Like, it's all delicious, but you really don't know, like, what it's supposed to be. It's just like, I don't know, maybe not cotton candy, maybe cloud. I don't know. What is it?
Well, cotton candy is like that fluffy thing that you get at fairs, right? Like the big pink fluffy stuff.
Candy floss, you would say.
Yeah, candy floss, right? So I'm actually picturing the fact that you can kind of like will it into different shapes and sizes, mm-hmm. and you put it into your mouth, you get tingling sensations, and it kind of like shrinks up. And yeah, no, I thought that was a really great vivid analogy. I love that. I love it. It's cotton candy. We should call it the Cotton Candy Podcast.
I think we get much different listeners.
But no, listen, on a serious note, that was close to getting on the list because our second episode on the Fueling Creativity in Education podcast with Marta Devadogic was around creativity and the definitions of creativity. And Marta challenged that scholarly definition of new and useful. And actually, if you go back and listen to that episode, I want to say that she kind of refers to it as somewhat being mechanical. And I can't remember the exact phrasing of it, but it's interesting because in the age of generative AI, of course, creativity scholars are going back and revisiting the meaning of what creativity means within the field because of the fact that we need to add the human aspect to it a little bit more. And so to your point, within the podcast, I think the humanness of creativity has been expressed, the fun aspect. I'm sorry, I'm going to go out and say that generative AI can't have fun. I'm going to just throw it out there. It might pose a fun activity, absolutely, but I'm going to say that generative AI doesn't laugh. And I'm going to say that whatever you do with generative AI, it doesn't actually get a lot of meaning itself from. And I think that comes from the human aspect. And I think that, you know, what you're talking about is the meaning behind our intentions when we go and engage in any type of creative activity. And it's that relationship we have to those meanings and intentions that really make creativity special.
Love it. Well, Matt, I have really enjoyed this conversation, and it's just what I needed to wrap up these 3 years and move on to the next three.
Here's a question for you, Cindy, before we go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Will we still be doing this podcast in 3 years' time? And two, how do you think it might change? Ooh, that's a good question.
Thanks for putting me on the spot.
Yeah, that was a good question. I like that.
Initially, I think I would have said, no, we won't be doing it in 3 years, but I actually think we will, because I think we're into a flow right now with our production. We're having amazing people still contact us. I remember the first year we did this, you said, well, there's not that many people we have to interview, but recently we've had so many people reach out to us saying, we would love to be on your podcast. And there's so many people to talk to. And I think each person brings a unique perspective. So I would say, yes, we will still be going in 3 years. What about you?
Well, I'm kind of getting over the fact that you said initially you was going to say no. I mean, we'll be definitely around in 3 years' time. How it might change is interesting. You know, obviously, I'm not going to go down there. I feel like I'm enjoying generative AI. I'm writing a lot about generative AI on LinkedIn, but I've actually enjoyed not having some podcast episodes on generative AI over the last few weeks. So I'm not going to go and bring up the generative AI discussion right now. But obviously, you and I have started to use some AI tools in the production process that's assisted us, I think, in A, improving the quality, and B, actually improving efficiency. Basically, it takes less time to produce. The question is, will we get to a point with generative AI where we may not necessarily have to have synchronous discussions with our folks that we're interviewing? That gets interesting. And then might we have some generative AI stand-ins? So, you know, if I want to record at 9 a.m. or 8 a.m. on a Friday, and Cindy, you say, sorry, I'm not around, I've got to go to, you know, so-and-so, I can say, no worry, let's tap the button and have Cindy's generative AI stand-in. And all you have to do, Cindy, is just tap in some of the questions that you want to ask.
Wow, that would be wild. And it could even make my own voice, which is even more wild.
Yes, yes. And actually, to that point, 3 years from now, I think the Fueling Creativity and Education podcast is going to be translated into all of the languages around the world. And hopefully, we've expanded our audience significantly because of that. I think that probably might happen within the next 2 years.
Oh, I would love to see that happen. So for those of you listening, we'd love to hear your predictions. What do you think is going to happen in the field of creativity and education? And what were some of the things that have evolved for you in your own thinking? We'd love to hear from you.
Yes, and please reach out to us. This is another call. We've had a couple of people reach out and say that they want to be on the show, but we want to have even more people reaching out and saying they want to be on the show, because as we've said multiple times, we absolutely love it when our guests come on the show, particularly educators who are able to talk about some of the great things that they're doing in their classrooms. So reach out to Cindy and I at questions@fuelingcreativitypodcast.com. My name is Dr. Matthew Werwood.
And my name is Dr. Cindy Burnett. This episode was produced by Matthew Warwood and Cindy Burnett. Our podcast sponsor is Curiosity to Create, and our editor is Sam Atkinson.